This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, welcome to Unpacking Malaysian Cinema, where we take stock of the issues facing the Malaysian film industry today. I'm your host, Thomas Barker. In this episode, we explore work conditions and labour issues in the Malaysian film industry. As media and art industries have merged in the past decade to encompass content, it has become difficult to maintain common standards of pay and conditions. Content is produced for a diverse range of platforms that includes television serials, television commercials, feature films, web content, and corporate videos. New digital technology has also driven down the cost of production, but at the same time has lowered the barrier of entry to the industry, increasing competition and lowering costs. In 2014, members of the film and television industries staged a large protest near Zunegara next to Finas to protest work conditions in the film and television industries. In particular, they were angry about a stagnation in production budgets. Called Switch Off, the movement was a loose coalition of film workers. Although responses to the protests and the issues raised have been slow, it reveals that there were deep problems for film and television workers in Malaysia.
Stesen-stesen supaya barang dibuat dengan bagus. Kita tidak mahu menjadi minta sedekah. Betul tak? Sebab kita ada bakat, kita ada tenaga, kita kreatif. Kita perlu ingatkan stesen-stesen, orang yang ada bakat menjanakan bisnes mereka dan mereka tidak boleh lupa pada kita. Kita bukan nak berperang, tapi kita nak bersama-sama bekerja untuk kita sekarang dan juga generasi yang akan datang. Dia nak buat duit, biar dia nak buat duit. Kita pun nak buat duit juga. Kita nak juga kereta BMW. Takkan diorang saja nak ada kereta BMW. Betul? Kita juga nak kereta Mercedes-Benz. Takkan diorang saja nak Mercedes-Benz. Tanpa kita seni, they are nobody.
Okay, saya Jamil Mutalib. Saya terlibat dalam industri ini sejak tahun 1995, 96, 97 dulu lah, masa ekonomi gawat dulu lah. Benda tu meredum banyak dan harga belian TV, bahan-bahan ni, produk-produk bahan-bahan untuk TV apa semua pun saya nampak turun. Tapi masalahnya sekarang ni, selepas pada tu, bila harga tu naik, stesen TV tetap dengan harga yang turun dulu, dia tak naik balik. Patutnya bila ekonomi dah naik, dia dinaikkan. Sebab pada masa turun tu saya difahamkan, sebab masa tu saya bekerja, bos saya kata kita faham keadaan ekonomi, so harga turun pun tak apa, kita ikut juga, kita akur, sebab kita nak apa, sama-sama industri. Tapi bila harga naik, stesen tak mau naik benda tu. Kenapa stesen tak naikkan benda tu, sedangkan benda tu sepatutnya selaras, masa turun kita turun, masa naik kita naik. Dan keadaan sekarang ni pun ekonomi sangat apa, makin turun harga, dan sekarang ni harga pun macam-macam. Petrol baru subsidi baru dikurangkan menyebabkan harga tu naik 2 kupang, walaupun 2 kupang tu nampak sikit, tetapi 2 kupang tu bukan sekadar melibatkan orang-orang yang bekerja tu nak bubuh minyak motor, minyak kereta, tetapi kita punya kos production pun akan bertambah, kita punya logistik kita akan bertambah. So maknanya benda tu akan melibatkan peningkatan kos kepada kita punya produksi. Harga macam mana? Dari producer pun nak untung. Bila producer nak untung, producer mungkin akan cut pada benda-benda lain, pada bayaran kepada kru, bayaran pelakon, dan bayaran kepada prop lah apa semua tu. So benda ni akan menjadi tidak adil, kualiti tak akan bagus. Dan saya sangat sokong kepada apa nama ni, Switch Off 14 ni, sebab kita bukan nak menuntut benda yang bukan-bukan. Kita nak supaya benda tu setara dan adil. Itu saja.
So So what are the issues that crews and workers face working on film projects in Malaysia? We spoke to a number of filmmakers to find out what the problems are for those who work behind the camera, on set and on location. Work conditions can depend on how people get into the field, how they find work and how they gain skills and move up the ladder. Only recently has there been a network of film schools training young Malaysians in specific skill areas. Many film workers don't have formal qualifications, but rely on their reputation and experience to find work.
Even without qualifications, one can be a director if you know how to market yourself to get the right project, and yeah, especially the film industry and TV industry.
That's James Lee, a renowned indie filmmaker and director of the 2004 film The Beautiful Washing Machine. He was behind the recent YouTube feature KL24 Zombies, co-directed with Gavin Yap and Charmaine Othman.
It shows by the quality of work that's being churned out. There's no QC. Unlike, I think, for instance, in US, we know there's a director's guild. You need to work certain hours before you can claim to be a director. You know? But in Malaysia, there's no system. So I think it's very weak. So everybody could claim, I'm a director, you know, I'm a writer, with no qualifications or background or experience. For a good director, he needs or she needs to understand the whole process of filmmaking, from the production side, the business aspect of it, to the creative writing, and finally acting, and the technical aspect of filmmaking. Because I always believe, once you understand all this stuff, the people tend to work with you, so they're not working for you. So there's a difference between working for you and working with you.
To become a filmmaker, according to James Lee, is not a standardized process, and there's no clear career trajectory. Filmmakers build their careers based on personal connections, reputation, and their willingness to take on jobs. Elise Schick spoke to freelance filmmaker Kenneth Raj and asked him how he got into the film industry.
16 years ago, there were not a lot of classes or workshops or anything much available in terms of training for a young filmmaker. You get basically on-the-job training. Everything that I learn is through work, through shoots. Every shoot, you learn. You do something wrong, you learn from it. You ask questions from the DP, from the director, from the producer, art director. You learn what not to do, you learn what to do. Even those days, there were no internet. You can't just Google what an RE camera does. You can't just Google what a RED camera does. What's the difference between the RED Epic and the RED Weapon? What's the difference between the resolution? Why, if you change the resolution on the RED camera, your lens magnification change? Why, if you stick a lens onto an RE camera, that doesn't happen? So is it a sensor thing? Why is that? Those days, you have to ask the DOP. You have to ask the camera assistant. If they know about it, if they have used the camera before, then they can tell you about it. Or if you can get an instruction manual. Nowadays, everything is on Google. And I never received any degree in filmmaking. I never received any college training to be an AD or producer. Everything I learned is through experience. I didn't start off being an AD. I started off in the production side because when I first started out, I learned about marketing, about quotation, about showreels, about film directors and all that. And then I decided I need to learn about producing the technical side. So I became a trainee line producer and became a line producer. I always had a boss that I'm learning from or a senior producer that I'm learning from. They will never let you out until they feel that you have enough experience to be able to run production by yourself.
For Kenneth, a career in the film industry started by being an apprentice. This means starting at the bottom, assisting others more senior and with more experience, and learning on the job. It socializes younger workers into prevailing norms and work practices, but it can also limit innovation. Working in the film and television industries is not a normal 9-to-5 full-time job. Most film workers are freelance, meaning they exist from job to job with no fixed salary. Kenneth Raj works this way.
I'm pretty fortunate to be able to get jobs. Unfortunately, I don't get a lot of local jobs because my rates are pretty high. I still stand by the fact that your rates are barely your experience and your position, you know. So the more experience you have, whereby your rates should be adjusted to your experience level. So if you're a new entry level first AD, then you shouldn't be charging too high a rate because it's not worth it. You need to be charging something low, you know. So for me, I tell my future clients, you want to use me, this is the rates that I'm giving you. You know, if you want to give me a better payment term, maybe I can look into some discounts, but generally speaking, this is the rate. You know, I'm not going any lower because if you want to go lower or you don't have budget, you might as well find somebody else to do it.
The problem now for many Malaysian filmmakers is that budgets have stagnated, and this is having an impact on wages. This is one of the major concerns of Switch Off and a recent campaign whose slogan is "Freelance does not mean free." There is a misconception that creative work is fun, easy, and therefore doesn't need to be compensated. Elise Schick asked director-producer Aziz Osman about his thoughts on the conditions of pay and payment as a veteran of the industry since the 1980s. Is the situation better in cinema then?
I always solve my problem. But it's very fortunate for the situation right now because of the evolution of the equipment, because everything is getting lighter and more advanced in a way that advanced. I mean, during my time, I mean, we got to shoot movies using celluloid 35mm for 1/400 feet. For the raw material, you got to pay R700. So I tried to minimize using a lot of footage. So what I did is to do a lot of rehearsals, and I'm going to shoot in one take. The most is two takes. Mm-hmm. So right now, my first digital movie was in 2012, Azura. So I have got this so-called lavish to shoot a lot. I got a setback because I overshoot it. Mm-hmm. And I got to throw about 30 minutes of material. It's bad, my movie comes choppy. The last movie I did was horrible. But no doubt, the price getting lower, and even the filmmaking. At one time, the average movie, when you go on location, the duration of shooting time is between 40 to 45 days. Mm-hmm. Right now, what I was told is you must try to finish a movie within 20 to 30 days. You got to reduce. But I would understand with the current equipment you're having is much more lighter. I mean, you work faster. You work faster. So you try to evolve. I mean, you got lower. I mean, you try to adapt it. What matters is you must prove that you can produce good movies. I mean, it's already proven by good movies that being produced with a very, very low budget. It's the matter of how you tell your story. That's what matters. You can even shoot it with your iPhone, the so-called Lauyat software for editing. You can do movies right away. So to me, you try to solve the problem. What matters is produce good materials.
I think it's payment expect. I mean, they've been questioning that we've been having this, especially on the TV, television. I mean, we've been paid the same amount as 20, 30 years ago in 1987, when I did a TV drama. I was given 120K for one particular tenant movie during that time in 1988. Right now, I've stopped doing TV drama recently, but I was told the highest that TV station going to pay is 90K. So, you know, 1988 and 2016, you know.
It's going down, in fact.
It's going down, in fact. So what kind of production value do you have right now?
Ongoing labour problems cannot all be blamed on the budget, but there is a clear concern amongst film and television workers about pay and payments. After the break, we'll talk about some of the ways filmmakers are responding to these challenges. You're tuned into Unpacking Malaysian Cinema. I'm your host, Thomas Barker, on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Unpacking Malaysian Cinema. I'm your host, Thomas Barker. In this episode, we explore work conditions and labour issues in the Malaysian film industry.
The end of the day, right, whatever film project that you are involved in, commercials, feature films, telemovie, dramas, it all boils down to the budget. Whatever it is, it all depends on how much you have.
That's Kenneth Raj. He's a freelance assistant director and producer with more than 12 years' experience in the Malaysian film industry.
The thing that we are sorely lacking in Malaysia is a unified union to protect freelancers, to protect the people in the industry. We don't have that. In the commercial side, we are quite fortunate that different departments have actually band together, grouped together to actually form an unofficial union. You know, like the camera department, the DOPs, they have this thing called MyEC. So that is their group union, whereby they fix the rates already for focus pullers, for second AC, for the DP, based on experience and based on position. So they have that. And our commercial art department, they have standardized their fees as well, based on experience. You know, even the technical crew, most of the gaffers and the key grips have their own rates. So it's a normal common rate all over. For example, 2016, they increased their rate. So the gaffer and the key grip is now charging like 900 a day. I don't know how much they charge in feature films. I always hear a budget problem in feature films. I don't know whether it's the funding or is it it the investors or is it the producers take the money before the shoot actually happens? You know, sometimes you hear of a new company, they are funding, they do a feature. After that, they finish the feature, they don't pay the crew. You always hear these horror stories happening, you know. There is no body or union that actually help to make sure this doesn't happen. Yeah, we sign contracts, but it's a private entity that you're signing to, you know, a private corporation. So what happens? Who takes care of us? The local government only gets involved when someone reports like, oh, this film company is bringing in foreigners here without work permit. So if the director DP from America doesn't have work permit, they will come and then they will tell you to stop shoot, you know, and then bring him for questioning. You know, they'll bring the immigration people, they'll bring the finance officials, you know. That is if people complain. But when people complain about not getting their salary or getting their fees, they'll say, hey, can you take it up with the company? So no one is there to look after the benefits of the freelancers especially. I don't know who's doing what, where, why. Something needs to happen. It's been a very, very, very long time. Rates are still the same. The freelancers don't charge too high a rate because if you charge too high a rate, people don't use you. So you don't have a job. If you don't have a job, you can't feed your family.
Kenneth Raj raises the problem of getting paid and the importance of standardizing rates across the industry. But the industry is also rife with charlatans, fly-by-night operators, and a lack of protection for workers.
It's the safety thing that is severely lacking here. The best we can do here, which is actually not bad, we have an ambulance there, but shouldn't you have the ambulance there anyway?
That's actor and stuntman Henzi Andalas Nusantara. We asked him about his experiences working on set, especially around safety and insurance.
Basically, it's safety. One of the main reasons why we went to Australia and we told MDEC this is because we had a friend of mine pass away by missing the boxes that he was supposed to fall on. And you would think, how can you miss the boxes? Just put more boxes, right? And then boxes. It's boxes against somebody's life. I'll go on record saying this. They should have had more boxes on that day so that even if I tried to do a long jump, you still hit the boxes. You have boxes way more than physically anybody could reach just to be safe. Stunts, no matter how stringent the protocol, it's stunts, right? It's not safe. Because it's not safe, that's why you have all these stringent protocols. But then things happen. We were supposed to come back and be the entity, at least a few people, who were going to revolutionize the industry, at least the stunt industry, and put in all these safety protocols. Well, alas, as they say, right? Some of us are doing their best to do that. And on my side, Yan Kasim has his own team, and with his team, he's very safety conscious. But we have no clout because there is no law that states that you have to do this.
It's not just salaries. Work conditions are another concern. Long hours, no overtime pay, as well as health and safety issues. We asked Aziz Osman about some of the things he's seen on set.
I always have my crews covered by insurance. I do not know others. That's for security. Even in real life, at the end of the day, then you got to go to hospital. And who's going to pay for the hospital bill? So you can never know. So I would really encourage my production. I do not know other. They always say that this is fate, but you can never know.
Have you been on a production where that has happened? And has there been?
Several times, yes.
Yeah.
Several
times. Could you tell us the story?
Yes, during that time, there was irony. It happened in Fantasia, where I got a stuntman that the scene is the bad guy, the devil, got burned, the whole body. So the devil, that character, wearing a costume with plastic glove, everything. When he was hit by lightning, he got burned. So at the first place, I told the stuntman that just paint his hand black, that would represent the gloves. If anything, you just take off the mask. What he told me that we did this before, we're very experienced, we know what we're doing. Okay, fine. So he wear it and put on the plastic glove. It is flammable. We make a paper mache with plastic, everything. So he was covered, everything. And after that, they bathed him with solvent for him to get him easily burned. So when the times come, yes, he got burned. Mm-hmm. But I'm not satisfied with the amount. I want more. I want more fire. So we had the second take. Then it was excellent. He was burning like... he was like screaming... Then after that, when I said cut, he keep on screaming. Actually, he said because of the situation, because he was wearing plastic glove, he cannot take off because everything is burning. He supplied us with 4 small fire extinguisher, and we tried to distinguish the fire at him, and it's finished. Raquel, all empty. My house was like 300 meters from where. So imagine me running to the house to get water and coming back. Like, he was, at the end of the day, to make the story short, he got burned.
Ended up in hospital and...
Okay, that's a lesson. That's a lesson. Okay, but I did warn him that, I mean, we can never know. Even my colleagues, there's some accident, even death happen. So I would encourage the crew, the society, to make it as a compulsory. Mm. Especially now, to make a movie that get attention, you got to be loud. I mean, yep. You got to be loud. There's going to be a lot of explosions, mm-hmm. stunts, whatsoever. Even though there's CGI, but you know, having CGIs and everything, they're two different things.
Even with the Rampage films, Police Evo, I mean, they had quite spectacular car stunts.
I'm not worried about the major, like Astro first, and they have their laws. I mean, it's compulsory to have insurance, only the small companies.
Mm. As a producer, do you see crew welfare as a cost or burden?
It's not a burden. Okay. It's worth it. When you appreciate people, when you give, people would appreciate your intention in having children for them. At the end of the day, you have a good impression. They say that he's a good producer. I mean, he takes care of his crews. That's what matters. I mean, especially for my production, I would encourage that we work as a family and we look after each other. That's much more important.
I guess, of course, that word gets around about who the good producers are, the bad ones, the unscrupulous.
Obviously, we're having a small so-called film industry. I wouldn't dare to call it an industry, but since they keep on mentioning it's an industry, it's a small industry and words gets around.
Yeah.
When you do not do good to people, you look after your crews, your stars, go bad, it will get around somehow or other.
One way to help mitigate these problems and provide protection to workers is through the establishment of associations and unions. To work in film and television in Malaysia, you need to be a member of one of the associations and to join the Creative Content Industry Guild, an accreditation agency set up by the government in 2011. But many complain that the associations are not doing their job properly, and there has been growing talk of establishing unions which can better protect filmmaker interests and lobby for better pay and conditions on their behalf.
Personally, I've lost faith in local associations. I've seen their credibilities and capacities during the FFM issue. I have lost respect towards them. And I think if every single directors, they can demand their own rights, I think we don't even need the association. It's all started from the individual. If they really respect their work and they really demand for what they're supposed to have, their own rights, I think we don't even need the association. It's all started from the individual. If they really respect their work and they really demand for what they're supposed to have, I think we don't need to have association at all.
Another idea is for a central body to oversee and manage the creative industries and intervene in disputes. This was one of the demands from Switch Off, and an idea shared by others. Here's Aziz Osman again. The Switch Off campaign was in part demanding that there be this kind of oversight body over the creative industries and the film industry in particular, and could help regulate wages and so on and so forth. Do you agree that it can be a kind of a body that can oversee and regulate the film industry?
I'm going to talk the overall situation. You're talking about Switch Off. When you help this so-called Switch Off gathering or whatever, who do you want to get attention from, first and foremost? As far as I know, nobody. Mm-hmm. Nobody cares. Because as if you haven't proved that you're worthy, you see? It's very bad for me to say that, but it's true. You must prove the industry is worthy. You must prove that you can produce good product. This is based out of my frustration. I would say that as a filmmaker myself, because I'm too, not just being a filmmaker. I'm a moviegoer. I watch a lot of TV. So I haven't seen, I mean, we're going on a way that we can be proud of. No. Only recent, yes. But unfortunately, most Malaysian, in a way that we want to promote ourselves, we got to do our own. That's sad. I mean, you have Yuna, you have James Wan, and they have their so-called position because they do it on their own. They're not being supported by so-called Profima. First and foremost, you must prove yourself that you're worthy. And then I would say that this situation represent me. At the first place, when I want to become a director or filmmaker, I asked my producer that I want to do a movie. I know it's going to be a good movie, and you don't even have to pay me because I know I want to do. You must prove yourself first. I'm going to make sure that my material, people can watch, consumable, let me say. But if you have 10 local movies, only watchable 2-3 movies, how can you be proud of that situation? I mean, you must change. Mm. But in order for change, I do not dare to ask LPF or FINAS to change. We must change ourselves, the filmmaking ourselves. Yes, you get rich doing movies. But if you demand for prestige or you want to get attention, you got to be worthy.
You mentioned just then about Profumo and other kind of unions, right? I mean, as a filmmaker, you have, it's compulsory to be a member of at least one of them, right? Mm-hmm. Do you think they're valuable? Do they do their job as representatives of you as a filmmaker? And
I'm not sure whether they're doing their job or what, but it's good for us to unite. I was once a committee in FDM myself, but I quit due to conflicting. That's normal. I quit is just because of I've got my own idea and I tried to prove myself, my point. And at one time, if you're familiar with Mamat Khalid and Afrin Shawki, we did collaborate and tried to overturn, but it didn't work. I mean, overturn away in a democratic way. The intention is there. But union, for us to be united, is a thing of a must. Because when you claim that this is an industry, I mean, we must work together. But unfortunately, I always being the black sheep of my own ideas. Like I told you just now, what matters is to prove myself. You must prove yourself you're good filmmaker, good storyteller, especially good storyteller. Mm. I mean, we have a lot of good filmmakers here. Unfortunately, compared to my so-called glory era at time, there's no such thing as film school as well, but now that you have a lot. But to be a good storyteller, you must have your own aura. That's, for me, you got to have that through a mentor. You learn techniques through maybe from institutional, from university, or from college. But to get the spirit, you got to have a mentor, a good one. And that's, I always believe in that. That's why right now I still believe that when we have a collaboration from so-called old-timer like me, like Aflin, and we try to grab. I did that before with this. I collaborated with the late Zain Mahmood, who was the ex-general director of RTM, and he is a very good scriptwriter. He's a very good TV producer. And we collaborated and we got Phenomena and the Controversial Fantasia. So I believe in having that synergy, we can have good productions.
Aziz Osman points to an important problem and puts the blame back onto filmmakers themselves. But where does the film industry go from here? Work is being done to improve salaries and conditions, but it's a slow process. So we'll leave it to Aziz Osman and Kamil Othman to have the final word.
At the moment, producers own 100% of the film intellectual property. How important is it for crews to have an ownership stake in a film's IP? Do you think that model could work here?
Not yet, because as it is, I think we haven't really have this control of own craft, actually. You cannot guarantee whether your movie would work, would sell. If there's a contract on the getting royalties or getting additional bonuses, suddenly the film doesn't work and the producers lost money. But remember, the demand will still keep going. They'll ask, where is our pay that you promised? Where's because it's based on the contract. As it is, I would say that we haven't really controlled the craft of storytelling, good filmmaking. We cannot guarantee on that. I myself admit that out of 10, 2, 3 are watchable. Police Evo hit box office, then everybody start following. I dare to say that because I myself, a trendsetter, I don't follow. I try to make my own stuff. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Unfortunately, the one who works, the producers gain. The one that I produce.
Secondly, is about the IP. But the very industry we're talking about right now, the foundation is creation and exploitation of intellectual property. Since we are in the business of creating properties of the intellectual type, a different set of criteria, parameters, policies, guidelines must be in place. So when I first came into FINAS, this was the mandate given to me by the government. Try and see this as an industry. I am getting resistance not from the what I call the direct, in a direct sense, but this has to be coupled with this thing called awareness creation. And if the people that holds the pen, that holds the authority to do things, are still unsure because maybe they have been wrongly advised in the past and all that, that's part of the challenge now. So we have the dual role. One is creating awareness and also to see the rationality of certain actions. Because right now it seems that in the past, I mean, in my personal view, it's like the ship is like sinking and we know where the holes are and we're just patching the holes. Whereas I'm talking about remove the board, put in new boards and let the ship be afloat again.
This was episode 4 of the 8-part series Unpacking Malaysian Cinema. In the next episode, we discuss independent filmmakers and Malaysia's Indies. All episodes can be streamed or downloaded from bfm.my and the BFM mobile app. Research and interviews by Elise Schick and Arvina Irene. I'm your host, Thomas Barker. Join us again next week on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.